live in Times Square. This is Good Morning America.
Good morning, America. U.S. troops are preparing for a Russian invasion of Ukraine.
President Biden ordering 8,500 U.S. troops to be put on heightened alert, meaning they are ready for rapid deployment to support America's NATO allies if Russia invades Ukraine.
The president held a video conference call with European leaders to coordinate the response. More diplomatic talks in Paris tomorrow as Russia builds up its forces on the Ukrainian border. Senior foreign correspondent Ian Pennell is on the scene in Ukraine. Good morning, Ian.
Yeah, good morning, George. That's right. Both Russia and America, NATO, increasing their military options around Ukraine, adding to this sense of an escalating crisis. But at the same time, there is still reason to hope that perhaps diplomacy could win the day.
This morning, the United States and NATO allies pledging more reinforcements for the region, with additional weapons expected today as the Russian troop buildup gathers pace. Overnight, more Russian military trains arriving to the north in Belarus as Russian ships setting sail in the Baltic Sea. Meanwhile, President Zelensky of Ukraine giving another nationwide address, urging people to stay calm. But U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken accusing Moscow of menacing Ukraine, saying it's an issue of global consequence.
Even as we're looking to advance the diplomacy, advance the dialogue, we have to be, and we are, prepared when it comes to defense and deterrence.
The Kremlin accusing the administration of hysteria, saying it has no plans to invade. President Biden meeting virtually with European leaders, discussing efforts to deter Russian aggression on the Ukrainian border. The US now placing 8,500 troops on heightened alert for rapid deployment to support a NATO response force if necessary.
The United States has taken steps to heighten the readiness of its forces at home and abroad.
But for the time being, these troops will not be deployed to the region.
I want to reinforce that as of now, the decision has been made to put these units on higher alert and higher alert only.
As American troops remain at the ready, other NATO countries also deploying further military resources to the region, including warships, fighter jets and additional ground troops. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson calling the Russian buildup of troops on the Ukrainian border evidence of Russia's intention to invade.
The plan for a lightning war that could take out Kiev is one that everybody can see.
The Department of Homeland Security now warning of potential Russian cyber attacks if the US or NATO responds to an invasion of Ukraine, saying Russia maintains a range of offensive cyber tools that it could employ against US networks, from low-level denials of service to destructive attacks targeting critical infrastructure.
The Kremlin's been talking this morning, saying that it's profoundly concerned by the latest U.S. moves, but it won't comment until it receives its written response from the Biden administration. Meanwhile, France and Germany planning to try to revive these de-escalation talks with Russia and Ukraine. That takes place in Paris tomorrow. Cecilia?
Still hoping for an off-ramp. Okay, Ian, thank you. The Pentagon placing, as you said, those troops on high alert, but for now not deploying them to the region. So let's bring in our senior White House correspondent, Mary Bruce. Mary, this still marks a major shift for the administration.
Yes, Cecilia, good morning. There is simply no question that putting these troops on high alert is a major pivot for this White House. So what changed? Well, as the Pentagon says, it was clear that Russia had no interest right now in de-escalation. As for what comes next on that call yesterday with European leaders, the president and these leaders discussed moving ahead and imposing and preparing to impose massive economic costs on Russia and these efforts to reinforce security in the region. Now, the White House and the president continue to underscore their desire for a diplomatic solution here, but it's just not clear if compromise is achievable or if Putin has any real interest in diplomacy, Cecilia.
Yeah, Marion, I want to ask you about another moment there at the White House yesterday. You were in the room for it, the president responding to a question from a Fox News reporter with a profanity. Let's watch.
Do you think your place is a political liability?
That's a great asset. More inflation. What a stupid son of a bitch.
All right, the White House, the president trying to clear the air overnight.
Yeah, that reporter Peter Ducey says he received a personal call from Biden, the president telling him, quote, it's nothing personal, pal. Ducey says he appreciated the president's call, that they had a nice conversation. But Cecilia, you know what these events are like. I have to tell you, this was not a contentious line of questioning, but the president was clearly frustrated that he was being peppered with questions about Ukraine at an economic event. And Ducey's question, even though it was on topic, clearly struck a nerve with the president, Cecilia.
Yeah, about inflation. Okay, Mary, thank you so much. Michael?
All right, thank you, Cecilia. Now, returning now to that. News breaking overnight, North Korea firing their fifth round of missile launches so far this month. Our chief global affairs correspondent, Martha Raddatz, is tracking the latest. Good morning, Martha.
Good morning, Michael. Kim Jong-un has been relentless this month. These missiles are suspected cruise missiles, but he has also been test-firing short-range ballistic missiles, and he has hinted that with diplomacy stalled and tough sanctions still in place, he may resume testing of long-range missiles, ICBMs, and nuclear tests, which he has not conducted since 2017. Michael?
And Martha, those missile launches, they were just tests, but they were missile launches that added an airbase in the United Arab Emirates that put American service members at risk.
They sure did, Michael. This is a very different story and a major escalation. These missiles appeared to be aimed squarely at a U.S. base in a major city, UAE's capital, Abu Dhabi. The U.S. and UAE had to launch Patriot missile defenses to intercept those inbound missiles. You see it there. The incoming missiles were launched by rebels in Yemen who are backed by Iran. I've been to the base in the UAE. There are some 2,000 military personnel there, fighter jets, U-2 spy planes, and these incoming missiles sent them to bunkers. The Pentagon said it would be foolish to assume there was not a threat to our people, and they're taking that threat very seriously. But thankfully, Michael, no injuries this time.
Yeah, thankful that for that, Martha. Thank you so much. George?
Yeah, Michael, we're going to turn now to that breaking news this morning in the fight against Omicron. Pfizer announced the start of trials for its Omicron-specific vaccine booster, as the World Health Organization says the variant could be ushering in the end of the emergency phase of the pandemic. Trevor Ault is at a drugstore here in New York where they will soon be distributing free N95 masks. Good morning, Trevor.
Good morning, George. So as this virus continues to evolve, healthcare experts say it's imperative that our tools will continue to evolve with it. And this new vaccine being tested by Pfizer was designed specifically to fight the Omicron variant as it continues to spread rapidly. But this morning, there are many signs that some areas may have already seen their Omicron peak.
This morning, a new weapon being tested in the war on Omicron. Pfizer announcing the start of trials for its Omicron-specific vaccine booster, with more than 1,400 trial patients set to receive one or more doses of the variant-based vaccine. Though experts say it doesn't appear a strain-specific booster is necessary for people who are already vaccinated and boosted, one of the categories being tested is a three-shot course of the vaccine tailored for Omicron in patients with no vaccinations at all. It comes just as the FDA has pulled emergency authorization for monoclonal antibody treatments by Regeneron and Eli Lilly overnight. The treatments used to treat early mild cases in unvaccinated people and some breakthrough infections were found to be ineffective against the Omicron variant. As official calls to stop using the treatments have grown, the final cutoff causing massive disruptions in some states.
While this virus continues to surprise us in all sorts of ways, I do think that we're heading to a better place.
And there have been recent signs of hope in the pandemic as 31 states see new cases level off or decrease. But as one World Health Organization director warns, it is far too early to relax. 5 million Americans were infected with COVID in the last week, 22 states seeing at least a 10% increase in hospital admissions. And in New York, a state Supreme Court judge overturning Governor Kathy Hochul's mask mandate for public indoor spaces, calling it unconstitutional and unenforceable. The governor vowing to appeal.
And the federal government is now distributing more than 400 million free N95 masks. A lot of them are going to be going through national chains at 3 masks per person. Walgreens says they'll have them on Friday. Rite Aid says some of their stores will have them this week, with all of them getting it by early February. And CVS says they'll have them in the coming weeks as soon as they get them from the government. Cecilia.
Okay, Trevor, thanks so much. So we're going to shift gears now and turn to those opening remarks in the federal trial of those three former police officers charged in the death of George Floyd. Prosecutors saying the men didn't lift a finger as Floyd repeatedly said he could not breathe. Alex Perez joins us now with more on this. And Alex, we're learning that at least one of the accused plans to take the stand.
Hey, yeah, good morning, Cecilia. The federal prosecutor says those officers had a responsibility to George Floyd, in your custody, in your care, and that they failed to uphold their duties as officers.
This morning, day two in the federal trial of the three now former Minneapolis police officers who were there when Derek Chauvin pinned George Floyd by the neck until he died. Tu Tao, Thomas Lane, and J. Alexander King all charged with depriving Floyd of his civil rights when they allegedly failed to offer medical aid when Floyd was in clear need of medical care. Tao and King also accused of failing to intervene when Chauvin jammed his knee on Floyd's neck for more than 9 minutes. Lane can be heard on video of the incident asking if they should stop and check on Floyd. In opening arguments Monday, prosecutors telling jurors the trio had a duty as sworn officers to interject when they witnessed Chauvin's excessive force. But defense attorneys arguing the officers weren't properly trained and pointing the finger at Chauvin, arguing he took control of the incident.
This particular case is absolutely going to shape the culture of policing. It's going to send a very clear message about the way we expect law enforcement officers to act, even if it's one of their own that is doing the wrongdoing.
Chauvin is serving 22 and a half years after he was convicted on state charges and has pleaded guilty to federal charges.
And Lane's attorney says he does intend to take the stand in his own defense. This trial is expected to last 2 to 3 weeks. Michael?
All right, thank you so much. And now we're going to turn to Wall Street, where investors are bracing for more turbulence after yesterday's wild ride. The Dow down more than 1,000 points before bouncing back to actually gain some ground on the day. Our chief economics correspondent, Rebecca Jarvis, is live on Wall Street. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning to you, Michael. And these are the kind of giant swings in stocks we only see in times of great economic uncertainty. The last time we saw the Dow down 1,000 points in the day, only to claw back 100 points higher, was March 22 at the start of the pandemic when lockdowns were beginning. And we've seen this kind of turbulence before, in particular in tech stocks back in 2008. That was the end of the financial crisis in the midst of still uncertainty. The culprit this time around is inflation. We've seen prices rising at the grocery store, the gas station, the auto dealership. And the question is how the Federal Reserve is going to deal with this. And Wall Street anticipates the Fed is going to start hiking interest rates very soon this year. That will mean that the cost of borrowing goes up. It gets more expensive to borrow money to buy a home or a car or your credit card or for a business to expand by using debt. And the bottom line with that means that the stock market is anticipating this. They are anticipating that companies are going to be more volatile. For your 401k, what that ultimately means is that that could be volatile as well. But if you look at last year, stocks were up 27%. That means if you put 1,000 in at the beginning of the year, you'd have 1,300 by year end. This year, even with the volatility we've seen, with the market down about 8% so far, you still have more money than you put in January of last year. Michael?
All right, played a long game, right? Thank you so much, Rebecca. George.
Okay, Mike, we're going to get the latest now on Amy Schneider. She won her 39th straight game on Jeopardy last night, giving her the second longest streak in the game's history. Of course, she's behind the greatest of all time, Ken Jennings. TJ is on our Jeopardy beat. Hey, TJ.
Don't start with me, George. Look, Amy Schneider has won $1.3 million on this show now. That puts her fourth on the all-time winnings list for regular season, but only trailing now Ken Jennings for the all-time number of wins. And dare I say, she's kind of made it look easy.
A tagline for the 2008 Sex and the City movie urged viewers to get this verb away. Amy.
What is carried?
Her hot streak is one for the history books.
Who is MC Hammer?
It's Hammer Time, yes.
What is guru?
That's correct.
Jeopardy phenom Amy Schneider sailed past Matt Amodio's 38-game winning streak on Monday.
A 39-day total of $1,319,800. You now have the second longest streak in Jeopardy history.
And the competition wasn't much of a competition last night. Schneider trounced her opponents, at one point even sweeping an entire category.
What is 1999 bottles of beer on the wall? 2007 year itch? What is 1912 Angry Men? 1840 Winks? 1815 Minutes of Fame?
You add another 2000 and you swept that category.
She was so far ahead, even losing Final Jeopardy didn't matter.
Let's see how long it'll go, folks. We'll find out starting tomorrow.
Up next, beating now Jeopardy co-host Ken Jennings' record of 74 consecutive wins. Overnight, Amodio in awe.
I'm just tremendously happy. Amy, you can count to 39, and I couldn't. Congratulations. Don't stop there. Keep going all the way. I'm rooting for you.
Monday morning, Schneider talked to George right here exclusively ahead of her big win.
What's been the best part of the experience?
You know, I think that the best part for me has been being on TV, as my true self.
At the end of the day, the game is about knowledge, and Amy knows so much, and there's really nothing else to it, and it's just incredibly fun to watch her play.
All right, so only three people in the history of Jeopardy have won at least 38 games in a row. Two of them happened this season. Imodio, remember, was this season. So a lot of people asking, what's going on? Is it getting easier? Are the players getting better? What's happening? The better technique? And you heard Imodio say, this is probably the key to Amy's success. She's just smarter than the rest of us. Just that simple. Yeah. So it's been fun to watch. We'll see how. A ways to go to get to 74 with Ken Jennings, though.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch. Okay, TJ, thanks very much.
One of the three of us is dancing at the desk. I'm going to let you guess who. Welcome back to GMA. That is Janet Jackson with What Have You Done For Me Lately? Well, Miss Jackson has done a lot for all of us with all of those incredible hits. And this morning, we're going to get an exclusive first look at her new documentary. Cannot wait for that. Very excited.
I can't believe you called me out like that.
See, for dancing. What happens when the cameras aren't on you, George?
I have a lot of headlines right now, including President Biden. He's put 8,500 U.S. troops on high alert, ready for deployment to Eastern Europe to support our NATO allies as Russia is threatening to invade Ukraine. Biden and European leaders met virtually to discuss efforts to deter Russian aggression. More talks are scheduled in Paris tomorrow. Also right now, breaking news on COVID. Pfizer is testing a new vaccine against Omicron. They announced the start of trials for its Omicron-specific vaccine booster as the FDA pulled emergency authorization for monoclonal antibody treatments by Regeneron and Eli Lilly overnight.
Now we're going to turn to that quick-thinking grandmother who tricked a suspected scam artist. She secretly alerted the police who nabbed him on her doorstep. Janae Norman has a story for us this morning. Good morning, Janae.
Michael, good morning to you. Jean Edwards says she knew right away the call that she got was a scam, but she decided to play along for fun. Now, obviously, that can be dangerous, and it's not recommended by law enforcement, but it worked for Granny Jean.
This morning, the New York grandmother who avoided being scammed by scamming the would-be scammer. Last Thursday, 73-year-old Jean Ebert received a call from a man posing as her grandson, saying he'd been in a car accident and needed $8,000.
I hear somebody crying, saying, oh my God, I'm in an accident. I thought it was my son-in-law, who's a real comedian. Then he says, Grandma, I need your help.
But Granny Jean, knowing her granddaughter as her only grandchild old enough to drive, says she knew something was off.
So he says to me, you can Venmo $8,000. And I said, well, I don't have a Venmo account.
So the retired 911 dispatcher from Long Island says she decided to play along with the would-be scammer.
The first thing I said is, oh my God, are you hurt? How did this happen? I said, where are you? He said, I'm in New Jersey. Well, I played the game. And then I said to him, listen, don't call your mother. She's gonna be mad. Let me handle this.
She alerted police, who came to her home and waited for the suspect to arrive.
I actually said, was this such a good idea? But anyway, he's coming, so.
This doorbell camera recording as this man approaches her front door. She opens it, hands him an envelope stuffed with paper towels, not $8,000 cash.
Okay, have a good one.
And as he walks away, police move in.
Maybe they'll realize that they can be scammed too, because I played the game really well right from the beginning. They believed me hook, line, and sinker.
Law enforcement say these scams happen all the time, and unfortunately, the elderly, who are often targeted, often fall victim. Police say if you get a questionable call, don't listen to anyone claiming to be from the government or asking for money. And they also say to make sure to protect information you put online, because it's incredibly easy to be targeted on the internet.
This world that we live on, social media, and we post everything, birthday parties, family information. We are educating the bad people, the bad guys that want to take advantage on the information. They'll find you, you'll have your name there, they'll call it, and they'll take a shot.
So 28-year-old Joshua Gomez is charged with third-degree attempted grand larceny, and police advise against victim ever trying to confront a suspect. And of course, you want to try to avoid becoming a victim. So they suggest not answering numbers from calls that you don't recognize. Don't ever pay with gift cards or wire money. And of course, don't feel pressure. They say legitimate businesses give you time to make payments. And guys, police didn't say it explicitly, but it's safe to say don't mess with Granny Jean. Granny Jean for the win, though.
Yeah. The best tip for last. Okay, Janae, thanks very much. Coming up next, our exclusive first look at the new Janet Jackson documentary. She's speaking out about her relationship with Michael. We are back with an exclusive first look at the new Janet Jackson documentary. She's sharing details about her personal life, from her relationship with her brother Michael to the infamous Super Bowl fiasco with Justin Timberlake. Deb Roberts has the story. Good morning, Deb.
Good morning, George. Yeah, this is a first for the global singing superstar. Janet Jackson is famously shy and private, but for 3 years, she let down her guard with a documentary film crew, sharing very personal videos and opening up about those touchy subjects, such as her family, that Super Bowl incident, and the public glare that she faces as a single mom.
Why did you want to do this documentary?
It's just something that needs to be done.
A major moment for a music legend, Janet Jackson, in a new documentary revealing the most intimate moments of her life and career. Details even her biggest fans may not know.
There's a great deal of scrutiny that comes with having that last name.
The film, titled Janet Jackson, features many famous faces.
Janet Jackson's many. Many women.
She's an empowered woman.
She's a legend.
The private superstar offering up glimpses of her life over the years, even sensitive topics, including brother Michael, with clips giving an inside look at their bond in this exclusive look.
So I'm tired of injustice. I'm tired of the scheme. Your lies are disgusting. So what does it mean?
Okay, wait, let me write.
When kicking me down.
We're really going to see all of those pillars that really shaped who she is and really what drove her to ultimately take control. And here it is. It's like Control 2.0 as her, as this, you know, much older woman telling us finally her story. And what we're going to find out is all the reasons why Janet Jackson is timeless.
During the 2-night, 4-hour film, Jackson addresses the backlash she faced after the now infamous wardrobe malfunction in her 2004 Super Bowl performance with Justin Timberlake.
Justin and his team have been trying to contact us about you doing the Super Bowl.
The star questioning the two different outcomes for the singers. She was later blacklisted for a time. Timberlake, who apologized, went on to greater fame. Janet Jackson, a divorced mom.
How would you describe your relationship with men?
Also speaking openly about her bumpy love life with appearances by former flames James DeBarge and music producer Jermaine Dupri.
It was a magic relationship if it didn't hurt so much.
This is a vulnerable and honest Janet Jackson that you see in this film, talking about insecurities around her weight and all kinds of struggles she's faced over the course of her life. But her fans seem ready to embrace her, many already taking to social media to thank her for sharing her truth. Janet Jackson airs on Friday on A&E and Lifetime. Guys?
Like you said, finally telling her story. Thanks, Deb.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts. Step into the world of Hollywood like never before with Melissa Rivers' Group Text podcast. Melissa, renowned for her red carpet expertise and storytelling prowess, invites you to join her and her famous friends for hilarious and heartfelt conversations. From discussing the latest binge-worthy TV shows, navigating the highs and lows of life, and dissecting celebrity fashion, there is never a dull moment. With exclusive stories from special guests like Chelsea Handler, Cheryl Hines, your favorite reality stars, and deep dives into intriguing topics like the Where is Wendy Williams documentary, this podcast offers an insider's look into the glitz and glam of Tinseltown. It's not just Melissa's podcast. It's a collective experience where you're invited to join the conversation. So if you've ever wanted a peek behind the Hollywood curtain, subscribe to Melissa Rivers Group Text Podcast now on your favorite platform. Get ready for laughter, tears, gossip. In other words, unforgettable moments that'll keep you coming back for more. Don't miss out. This is one group text you won't want to exit.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
President Biden ordered 8,500 U.S. troops be put on heightened alert. He held a video conference call with European leaders. More talks are scheduled for tomorrow in Paris, as Russia builds up its forces on the Ukrainian border. I want to go back to our senior foreign correspondent, Ian Pannell, on the scene in Ukraine. Good morning, Ian.
Yeah, good morning, George. The United States and NATO allies pledging more reinforcements for the region, as you say, with additional American weapons expected to land this afternoon, even as the Russian troop builds up. Overnight, more Russian military trains were arriving to the north in Belarus. Meanwhile, President Zelensky here in Kiev giving another nationwide address, urging people to stay calm. But U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken accusing Moscow of menacing Ukraine, saying it's an issue of, quote, global consequences. While Moscow is saying Washington's promoting hysteria, denying any plans to invade. President Biden meeting virtually with European leaders, but at the same time, the Pentagon placing 8,500 troops on heightened alert for rapid deployment to support a NATO response force if necessary. For the time being, those troops won't be sent to the region, though. Yet other NATO countries also deploying further military resources to the region. That includes warships, fighter jets, and additional ground troops, but there is still room and maneuvering for diplomacy. Cecilia?
Okay, Ian, thank you very much. We're going to turn now to that breaking news this morning in the fight against Omicron. Pfizer announcing the start of trials for its Omicron-specific vaccine booster. So let's go back to Trevor Ault, who's at a drugstore here in New York City. Good morning again, Trevor.
Good morning again, Cecilia. So Pfizer just made this announcement. They have 1,400 trial participants who will be getting at least one dose of this Omicron-tailored vaccine. And some of those participants are fully unvaccinated. They're going to be getting three doses, though experts say right now a strain-specific vaccine isn't necessary or doesn't appear to be if you're already fully vaccinated and had a booster. And this news comes as overnight the FDA rescinded its emergency authorization for monoclonal antibody treatments from both Regeneron and Eli Lilly, saying they've been shown to be ineffective fighting this Omicron variant. Now, there are some hopeful signs. 31 states are seeing new COVID cases either level off or even decrease. But having said that, 22 states in the past week have seen their hospital admissions climb at least 10%. And the federal government is now distributing more than 400 million free N95 masks. A lot of them are going to be going through major national chains. You can pick them up three per person in the coming days and weeks. Michael.
All right. Thank you so much, Trevor. Now to the mayor of New York unveiling a plan to crack down on illegal guns after the senseless shooting of two officers left a rookie officer dead and another critically injured. And New York is far from the only American city trying to get a handle on violent crime. Phil Lipoff is here with more. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Michael. And you're right. Nationwide, we have seen a dramatic increase in gun violence. Already this year alone, excluding suicides, more than 1,100 people have died, and at least three law enforcement officers have been killed. This weekend was particularly violent, with two NYPD officers being shot as they responded to a domestic violence call. One officer killed, the other in critical condition. The alleged shooter killed there at the scene as well. In response to that incident and many others, Mayor Adams, as you mentioned, now plans to deploy plainclothes officers across the city and set up checkpoints at places like Port Authority, where these guns, these illegal guns, seem to be getting into the city. New York's Governor Kathy Hochul also creating an interstate task force with nine northeastern states, state police, NYPD, ATF, all meeting to share resources and information to try to stop this problem. First meeting of the task force tomorrow. Guys.
Okay, Phil, thanks very much. Coming up, kids in COVID. Parents are stressed out over the mixed messages. Dr. Jen Ashton is going to be here to help sort through them.
Also this morning, what Tom Brady is saying about his future in football and his family.
And one of our favorite guests, Kevin James, is right there. He's going to join us live, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to GMA on this Tuesday morning, and we are excited for tomorrow. Oscar winner Javier Bardem is joining us.
It's going to be great, but now it is time for Pop News with Lara. Hey, Lara.
Reba. Hi, you guys. I'm just calling Reba. She's playing hard to get. Well, she'll be over when she hears this. I can assure you of that, because we begin with our friend Cyndi Lauper. Do you hear that, you guys? Her 1983 anthem, Girls Just Want to Have Fun. This song... And yeah, come on, you know you have sung it at full volume. Cecilia, I'm talking to you. Well, this song has joined a very exclusive club this morning, crossing 1 billion views on YouTube. Lauper took to Instagram to commemorate this historic achievement. Take a look at what she has to say.
Girls just want to have fun. 1 billion views. But hey, we do all want to have fun, so it ought to be heard. And I'll never forget, there was a cab driver driving down the road and going to us when we were dancing down Sheraton Square. Girls just want to have what? And we all yelled, fun, right? So it's true.
I mean, that is really one of the great videos. My producer Kelly and I have been just extolling on the virtues of that perfection. And so glad it's being celebrated. Lauper going on to share her goal for the look of the video, saying, quote, I wanted every little girl watching that video to have the joyful experience of seeing herself on that screen. I wanted us to be a community. Well, Cyndi, I can assure you, you succeeded in that. And what a community she is in now. Girls Just Want to Have Fun. The fifth song from the glorious 80s to surpass 1 billion views on YouTube. The others, Guns N' Roses, Sweet Child of Mine, Aha's Take On Me, Michael Jackson's Billie Jean. And you know what? I'm just going to play this one for you because, well, I need it. Go ahead. Oh, yes. Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up. You can find all of these 80s iconic videos on YouTube. I highly suggest you view them all. Put you in a great mood. And guys, the only thing blowing in the wind for Bob Dylan this morning are dollar bills. Hold on, I'm trying to catch them. Yeah, an estimated 200 million of them. That's what Sony Music America is paying for all of Dylan's master recordings, like a Rolling Stone. Billboard reporting that the deal was solidified last summer. Dylan just confirmed, though, the news, stating, quote, I'm glad that all my recordings can stay where they belong. Oh, and by the way, that 200 million doesn't even include Dylan's lyrics and compositions. Those were bought by Universal Music Group for a mere 400 million. Now, I'm no mathlete, but I say that's a lot of money. Congratulations to Mr. Bob Dylan. And finally this morning, our friend JoJo Siwa celebrating the one-year anniversary of her coming out. The 18-year-old dancer, singer, and Dancing with the Stars star and competitor taking to Instagram to commemorate the moment, revealing the coming out was really scary for her at first, but no more, writing, quote, in the last 365 days, I felt more love than ever. Please never forget that no matter who you are, what you look like, who you love, that you are absolutely perfect. Siwa going on to write that she truly believes she was put on this earth to be a role model, to let kids everywhere know that it's okay to love someone for who they are, no matter what. Thanks, JoJo, for that. And with that, I'll send it back to you, George.
Thank you, Lara. We're going to turn now to our GMA cover story, the challenge of raising kids during a pandemic. COVID is rarely causing serious illness in children, but over 10 million U.S. kids have tested positive since the start of the pandemic. Ariel Reshef is here with the story. Good morning, Ariel.
Good morning to you, George. As you know, the pandemic can feel like it is ever evolving and like the goalposts continue to move for parents. So doctors we talk to say understanding the data surrounding kids and COVID can provide important perspective.
More than 2 years into the pandemic, many parents are coping with a crippling mix of confusion.
My biggest anxiety right now is how to keep them safe, especially when everything is constantly changing.
Exhaustion and fear.
Being in constant defense mode is exhausting.
Unprecedented case counts among children and rising pediatric hospitalizations are stoking concerns. But research suggests compared to adults, severe COVID infection among kids is relatively uncommon. And though pediatricians say it's not time time for parents to let down their guard, there is reason to be hopeful.
We do see children get hospitalized, but comparatively to Delta, we are seeing more children, when you look at percentages, have really great outcomes, meaning they have a mild symptom of a runny nose or a cough. And that is why it's up to every parent to decide, what level of risk am I comfortable with?
While pediatric cases spiked to more than 1 million last week, pediatric hospital admissions dropped 11% after a surge of more than 500% over the last 6 weeks. CDC data shows that children from birth to 17 have the lowest number of total hospitalizations from COVID compared to any other age group.
Most of the rise in pediatric hospitalization just has to do with a denominator. That is, if tens of thousands of children are being infected every day, the total number hospitalized will go up.
The CDC estimates roughly one out of every 1,000 children 17 and under who contract the virus will require hospitalization. Experts estimate that for vaccinated children, that risk is significantly lower, just one out of every 100,000. New research shows the Omicron variant, which accounts for almost 100% of new cases, is proving less severe than the Delta variant. And for many children, the symptoms are comparable to other respiratory viruses.
Many of these children are being admitted for things that they're admitted for other viruses, such as dehydration, oxygen support, like we would see in flu or RSV. So we're seeing it act very similar to many other viruses.
And as for transmission in schools,
it's actually lower than most places in the community.
Experts say these data points can help families strike a critical balance as we learn to navigate our new reality.
Do you foresee a point at which pediatricians say the risk-benefit analysis is on the side of relaxing those regulations?
The science is moving so quickly that the recommendations are constantly changing, and that is really hard for parents to hear. I do believe by spring we're going to get better answers, but that is a hard wait for parents.
There is light at the end of the tunnel, but we have to be patient. And doctors say it's important to remember that kids can transmit this virus to other vulnerable children or children who are immunocompromised, as well as adults who are at higher risk for severe illness. An important factor to weigh as you make those critical decisions for your own family.
Sure is. Okay, Ariel, thanks very much. Let's get more on this now from Dr. Jen Ashton. So what are the big things parents need to keep in mind?
Well, I think first we have to follow the science here. The CDC recommends that every child 5 and over get vaccinated. Clinical trials have shown those vaccines to be safe and effective. And then I think it's really important to, again, based on the data, based on the science, keep that perspective. Right now in the pediatric population, the risks of COVID-19 are overall low. Look at the numbers. 0.1 to 1.5% of all pediatric cases result in hospitalizations. It's way, way lower than that for COVID-related deaths. Of course, one COVID-related pediatric death is too many. But when you look at particularly like the classroom environment, that's one of the safer places to be overall based on the data that we have.
So classrooms are safe. What about play dates? What about athletics?
Well, so here's where I think parents need to take a holistic view. And remember, they need to be not only concerned with physical health, but mental health and psychological health and development as well. And I think then when you look at that, parents can look at some things to help stratify that risk. So first of all, you do want to know what is the local rate of infection in your area. If you're in an area that's coming out of this peak, things might be safer rather than if you're still in the thick of it. Obviously, environment matters. You want to choose outdoor play dates or settings whenever possible, weather permitting. Masking in crowded indoor areas still being recommended right now. And then we have to lead by example because children, particularly younger children, but adolescents as well, will follow our lead, particularly our psychological and behavioral lead. And if we look panicked and paranoid and frightened at every turn, they unfortunately.
So given that overall, is it time to loosen up on kids?
Well, listen, I think as we heard those pediatricians say, we're going to learn more by the spring, but we're 2 years into this. So right now, if you have a child with a compromised immune system, you want to take more precautions than others. But otherwise, it's about learning how to live with this virus.
Jen Ashton, thanks very much. Michael.
All right. Thank you, Jordan. Turning now to the big question so many fans have for 7-time Super Bowl champ Tom Brady. Will he return or will he retire? Will Reeve is breaking down what the quarterback is now saying about his future and his family. Good morning, Will.
Good morning, Michael. Tom Brady is so old by football standards that speculating about his future is something of an annual tradition. Usually it's just noise, but this time Brady himself may be signaling that it is real. He's done it all, but is he done?
This morning, Tom Brady adding fuel to the fire that his football future may be uncertain.
It's been six straight months of football every day consumed by day in and day out football. And I think now it's just some time to spend some time with my family and spend some time with, you know, my kids.
On a new episode of his Let's Go podcast, the 44-year-old seven-time Super Bowl champ reflected on his work-life balance, saying his family will help him decide whether to return for a 21st NFL season.
It's not always what I want. It's what we want as a family. You know, I'm going to spend a lot of time with them and figure out in the future what's next.
After Sunday's early playoff loss, Brady claimed he hadn't thought much about what would come next, now saying he'll look ahead with the help of his wife, supermodel Gisele Bündchen, and his children.
My wife is my biggest supporter. It pains her to see me get hit out there. And, you know, she deserves what she needs from me as a husband. My kids deserve what they need from me as a dad.
In the past, he's said his goal was to play until age 45. His birthday is August 3rd, just before the 2020 season will begin. He has a contract, but might just ride off into the sunset.
The funny part is I always said most guys retire and then move to Florida. I'm already in Florida, so it's really confusing even to me.
The famously regimented Brady said that one silver lining to Sunday's playoff loss was indulging in some waffles with his kids on Monday morning. Now, it's hard to see the man who sees avocado ice cream as the peak of gluttony ever letting himself go or letting go of the game, but it sounds like he might be giving himself the option, and his family is going to help him choose. Michael?
Well, I'll tell you what, he deserves the right to choose and do whatever he wants to do, Will, after all those seasons and all those wins. So thank you so much for that.
All right, now to our Food Evolution series, and this morning we're supercharging your kitchen with innovative new tools to make your meals fast and simple. This segment is a shoppable one, so just point your phone's camera at that QR code there on your screen. And our friend Becky Worley is joining us from the beautiful Cavallo Point Cooking School there in Sausalito, California, to show us the hottest new kitchen tech. Hey, my friend, good morning to you. You're going to start us off with all the healthy stuff, some fruits and veggies. What are we talking about?
Fruits and veggies, Cecilia, mean a lot of prep work. So these gadgets make it easier. My favorite, this is one from OXO that's an apple slicer. You just put it on top of the apple and then a little muscle, boom. Oh. You get perfect slices every time. This takes a 2-minute job and turns it into a 10-second job, and you reduce the friction for getting an actual snack that's healthy. And another thing that people really want to eat healthy with their greens, the famous kale salad. So another gadget I love, this is from Loose Leaf, and what it does, it's a green stripper. You just put the kale through these little holes and then strip the leaves off. You got one there, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to not slice my fingers off. Oh,
there
look at
go.
That, grab that's
that,
easy.
Grab that kale stripper.
Yes.
That's something you never thought someone would say to you on national television.
Exactly,
exactly. Get after it.
Yeah, you're right, that's totally easy. Look, this makes it so much easier. Okay, we were just talking about fingers and kitchen safety. Look, I've had these in my own kitchen. I am prone to accidents. You know me well enough to know. So how can we slice, dice, get it all ready for dinner and still keep our digits intact?
Yes, the gold standard is the mandolin, which is where you take your vegetable or fruit over a very sharp blade, and we've all been there in the ER with our finger in a towel. But this mandolin is from Dash, and it's gravity fed.
Oh.
And so you never get your fingers near it. And talk about slice and dice. I could see my kids loving this, and I wouldn't freak out about them taking a finger off because it has all of these safety features. Genius, right?
Completely.
So that's from Dash.
Okay.
I mean, this makes it actually, you know, I feel like Ron Popeil. I'm slicing, I'm dicing.
we can slice and talk. We often think at dinner about meat, a starch, and a veggie. How do we shift our mindset on that front to get us into something a little more healthy?
Yeah, you know, there's lots of ways. One, you think about pasta, right? What if you had zoodles instead? This is the vaghetti. Forget about it. You can create zoodles out of zucchini. Or think about things like home kits, where you can have them create portions that are vegetable forward, Home Chef and Sunbasket. Two good ones, guys.
Love it all. Thanks, Becky. Coming up, everybody, Kevin James. Stay with us.
Welcome back to GMA, live from Times Square.
And we are happy to welcome back our friend Kevin James. The Camp Queen star is out with a new movie, Home Team. Kevin, how's it going this morning?
Doing well, thanks. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. And we want to talk about the movie. First, I heard you had a stage debut this month, Oliver Twist the Musical with your kids.
Yes, I took a page out of the movie. Sean Payton went back when he was suspended. He ended up, coaching his son's football team. So I said, I'm going to take some time out of my schedule and just kind of spend it with my kids and perform with them in this theater group that they perform in. And they're amazing. And it's been a fun experience. It's been great. They've been teaching me a lot. I've been learning a lot hanging out with them. So it's great. And today's actually my daughter's seventh birthday, Sistine. I love you, Sistine.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, that's my little one.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
And that's not the only stage you've been on. And we hear you're out on the road doing some live comedy, some stand-up. What's it like to be back in front of a live audience?
It feels great. It is. It's amazing. It's so much fun to have that, connection again and be in front of a live audience. And it's been going great. So, continue on with that.
And let's talk about Home Team. You alluded to it earlier. It's based on a true story about Sean Payton, the New Orleans Saints head coach, who was suspended in 2012, but spent that time coaching his son's middle school team. We're going to take a look at you in action. Let's check it out.
We got our Z chip over here, but we're going to send our Z chip in motion. So now we have both wide receivers on this side. Once they cross the line of scrimmage, they're cutting right, which means our hot sauce.
I drop back and fake it to the line.
Yes.
I'm the line. I pretend to get the ball and block.
Yeah.
And Jason and I cut to the right, and then I throw it to the open tortilla chip.
Yes! Nice. There you go!
That is just how it was in all of our meetings, Kevin, I tell you.
Well, you know that.
Yeah, but when we see you playing a coach there, but in real life, what kind of coach would you be? Would you be tough, but fair, gentle, or flexible?
I'm very flexible. I don't know if you know that. I'm a dancer, so I would be flexible in my coaching as well. Watching Sean Payton, and getting to spend time with him and watch how he does it, it's amazing to me how much he has to deal with on a daily basis. He took us to the Saints facility. We watched. It was during the draft, too. So you can just see everything, how he breaks it down. And it's amazing how he really does lead everybody there. He's just an amazing guy.
This movie is a real family affair. Some of it your Hollywood family, some of it your biological family. Let's see, we've got Rob Schneider, a co-star, Adam Sandler, an executive producer. Your older brother Gary's in the movie too. Yeah. What was this like on set?
Yes. Oh, it's great. We always have a blast. And anytime I work with my brother, I always try to make it fun for me. So I'll give him something. I'll either shave his head or I'll like this one. We gave him a push broom mustache. He's got a massive mustache in this one. So we have fun. It really is a family affair in that everybody, when you do a Sandler movie, they're just everybody just enjoys each other. And we get to spend, this time together and have an amazing, make an amazing movie.
What do you hope people take away from this movie?
Just that, it's important to, first of all, to laugh, have some fun. It's a movie for everybody. And just that, it's important to take time and even in the toughest times to be able to connect and be in relationship with your family and your kids and do that. You can always find a bright moment in a tough time. And he does that in this movie. He really did. He spent the whole year coaching his kid. And it was the greatest season of coaching in his career, he said.
And
he won a Super Bowl. So that's pretty.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
Plug your ears, Strahan. Cool. Kevin, you're a big Jets fan.
Oh,
what
I
was
knew
it
that.
Like?
He's reminded me of that many times, but it's okay.
Michael, we've been through this. Yeah, yes.
What was it like playing a coach from a different team?
It feels weird always anytime you wear a different hat or a jersey or whatever, but I think the Jets are okay. They're going through some tough times themselves right now. But we're a young team and we're gonna hopefully be back. But this year it was we've already been eliminated from next season. That's how bad we played this year. That's what I say. So it's like, but coming up soon, we'll be okay. We're going to pick it up.
No doubt.
It's great to have you back, Kevin. Home Team starts streaming on Netflix this Friday.
All right. Now, former Bachelorette Rachel Lindsay, she has never been afraid to speak the truth. And now she has a new book of essays out called Miss Me With That, Hot Takes, Helpful Tidbits, and a Few Hard Truths. And here she is this morning, Rachel Lindsay. Good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're really glad you're here, and we're really glad to talk about the book. So the title, Miss Me With That, you say it's a phrase that you use a lot. What do you mean by it?
Yeah, it's something that I use in everyday conversation, and I want people to feel like when they're reading the book, they're hearing my voice. They're feeling like they're having an actual conversation with me, and that you're also getting a more casual side of me. I think people are used to seeing the polished version of me, the professional side, but with this book, I strip back the layers, and you're seeing what I hope you'll get is a whole other side of me, that I'm vulnerable, I'm sensitive, I'm a little bit sassy, which I think we already know that part.
We love that about you, and you have been no stranger to speaking out. So what made you want to tell your story this way now?
Yeah, I think because so much of my story has been told for me. You know, when you give yourself, or when you decide to be on reality TV, you don't get to control that narrative. And then a lot of times people have seen me speak out about being a champion for change and for diversity and for inclusivity. But I wanted people to get to know who I was before I came on the show. A lot of people think my life started the day I walked out of that limousine, but there was so much more to that, to how I became the person who was able to stand in front of them on television. So I wanted people to see that. I feel a lot of times I'm very misunderstood. Mm. And this book gives you the opportunity to understand me through each essay.
I love that. You say something in the book that really struck me. You say, contrary to popular belief, the best gift I ever received was not a wedding ring. It was the permission I gave myself to be imperfect. How'd you come to realize that?
Yeah, a lot of people want to say, how can you speak out, you know, against certain things with the franchise when the franchise has given you so much? And I think what they need to understand is I made the decision to be on this show, to change the course of my career, of my love life, of pretty much everything. And I decided to finally do something for me, not doing what I was supposed to do, but doing what I wanted to do. And it took a long time for me to say, hey, whose life is it that you're living, Rachel? And when I finally asked myself that question and I decided to take control of it, that's when I started to give myself the permission to really be who it is that I want to be. And you see me explore that in several essays throughout the book. And I think that's a question that a lot of people can relate to when you're at a crossroads in your life.
A lot of people are going to have this question for you. You and your husband, Brian, we know are one of the only few of a handful of couples from the show that have lasted this long. What's your secret?
The secret is not being performative. The secret is, you know, you come off the show and, you know, we have Bachelor Nation that's affiliated with the franchise. And a lot of times you feel like you have to perform for the audience, or you have to perform for social media. For Brian and I, immediately we left the show and we immersed ourselves in each other's realities. He moved to Dallas for me. We connected with our family, our friends. We built that circle of trust of people who know us and who love us. And that established a really strong foundation for us at the very beginning. And then other than encouraging each other, making sacrifices, and, you know, communicating with one another, those things, that really has just been the secret to our success. Realizing that, you know, we just need to be there for each other and to understand each other, because no one knows the relationship like we do. Wow. And I'm happy to say we're still going strong to this day.
And we are happy for you, Rachel, and your love and your book. Congratulations. Miss Me With That hits bookshelves everywhere today. Coming up, everyone, NFL insider Jay Glazer, his three pillars to help you turn your anxiety into motivation. Stay with us.
We're back now with my close friend, Jay Glazer. He's an NFL insider and founder of Merging Vets and Players. He's also written an inspirational new book, Unbreakable, all about turning obstacles into building blocks. Jay Glazer, good morning to you, my friend.
How are you, brother? How you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, people don't realize, but we've been friends for nearly 30 years. But until recently, I never knew you were struggling with your mental health. You never said anything to me, and you went from that to writing a book about it. So why did you write this book now?
Isn't that crazy, man? Like, this thing makes up its own set of rules, and I live in something that I call the gray, which is depression, anxiety, and honestly, it's hard. Every morning I wake up, I never know which version of me I'm gonna get. I'll wake up thinking the sky is falling, or everybody hates me, or the world hates me. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. And I understand it. Looking the outside, it makes no sense, because my life is great, but between my ears is not. And you just said it, Trey, and that's why I wrote the book. And we've been friends for 30 years.
We've been friends.
I didn't tell you this, right? I didn't tell you about this until, what, 2 months ago?
Yeah.
Because I had this shame. And you said, why? I said, man, I don't make the rules up of this thing. So I want people out there, I wrote the book, so we could take all the shame out of this.
Well, you're helping destigmatize this. And looking at that picture, realize how far we go back. You had hair and I had jowls. So, I mean, we were, that's a good old picture right there. But, you know, you've dedicated, Jay, which I love and I respect. You dedicated yourself to helping people fight through and also to heal. You have three pillars to get people beyond what you call the gray. What are they?
Look, mine's a daily thing that I have to do. So one of them is to have a team, whether it's us at Fox Neville Sunday, or, you know, I've started charities, as you said, or my gym Unbreakable, or my fight team. I just need teams. And I wrote the book so I can kind of expand out on this team and have more people walking this walk with me. So that's one. Number two, be of service, right? And there's ways in the book you could be of service if you're a millionaire or you're making, you know, $9,000 a year like I was when I first met you for those first 10 years. And by doing this book also, that's being of service. This helps me out. And then the third thing is laughter. And, you know, it's funny, Stray, none of you guys in the show know, is I've had an anxiety attack on Fox NFL Sunday every single show we've ever done since 2005.
Wow.
And the thing that gets me through it is laughter. So if you know, I crack a joke real early in the show. I'm trying to mess with you guys early in the show because the gray hates laughter. So that helps me a lot.
Wow. Had no idea. I don't think any of us had any idea, because, you know, you come on camera and you know your stuff and you're awesome at what you do. And you speak of service, you speak of team. You founded Merging Vets and Players, MVP, which it brings together former servicemen and women who retired, along with retired athletes. And they support each other, they help each other heal. And why do you think that's been so successful?
Because, you know, we're so raw and vulnerable there. And look, you take a bunch of combat vets and a bunch of athletes and you put them in a room together. The things you can learn from them are incredible. For me, I'm just their mouthpiece. I learn from them and I turn around and I communicate it. So we've had a lot of success in MVP, helping our veterans through the transition. So a lot of the lessons I've gotten from them, we've helped them with, are in the book as well. I think they'll help everybody.
And you believe in the power of teammates. I know Wiz Khalifa comes there as well, Chris Pratt, Sylvester Stallone, to your gym Unbreakable. But you also talk about loving yourself up. So really quickly, tell us what loving yourself up is.
Look, for somebody like me who doesn't know how to have self-worth, doesn't know how to like himself or love himself, this is my journey. I'm trying. So my depression and anxiety have forced me to do such big things on the outside to get love from the outside in, until I can learn how to love myself from the inside out. So I want us all to I'm proud of my scars. I'm proud of my physical scars. And now I'm learning to be proud of my mental scars as well. And that's why I think this book, we just went through a really hard time here, obviously with the pandemic. And there's a lot right now with this is a scary world. I think for anybody out there, whether you have clinical depression like me or whatever you're going through, I think this book will help you.
Well, Jay, you're helping a lot of people, and I appreciate you coming on, being so open, writing this book to help so many other people out there. As your friend, I love you, and you're teaching me how to be a better friend, because you've always been very giving to me. And Unbreakable, it hits. I love you, brother. Unbreakable hits bookstores today. Make sure you check it out. I want to thank you for watching on this Tuesday morning.
And check out our GMA podcast. You can scan that QR code on the screen right there. It's on Apple Podcasts, or search Good Morning America on your favorite podcast app. Have a great day, everyone.
Step into the world of Hollywood like never before with Melissa Rivers' group text podcast. Melissa, renowned for her red carpet expertise and storytelling prowess, invites you to join her and her famous friends for hilarious and heartfelt conversations. From discussing the latest binge-worthy TV shows, navigating the highs and lows of life, and dissecting celebrity fashion, there is never a dull moment. With exclusive stories from special guests like Chelsea Handler, Cheryl Hines, your favorite reality stars, and deep dives into intriguing topics like the Where is Wendy Williams documentary, this podcast offers an insider's look into the glitz and glam of Tinseltown. It's not just Melissa's podcast. It's a collective experience where you're invited to join the conversation. So if you've ever wanted a peek behind the Hollywood curtain, subscribe to Melissa Rivers Group Text Podcast now on your favorite platform. Get ready for laughter, tears, gossip. In other words, unforgettable moments that'll keep you coming back for more. Don't miss out. This is one group text you won't want to exit.